Reginald Howard has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts were when finally Jackie Robinson was picked to be the African-American to come in and integrate baseball.
Oh, I was elated as a youngster, and as a lot of other people were. But then as time evolves, you know, when you're a child, you see as a child and think as a child. When you get older, you kind of think a little different, see things a little differently. And as I begin to dialogue more with older people, older ballplayers in particular, when the Dodgers signed Jackie Robinson, there were eight teams in the American League and eight teams in the National League with 25-man rosters. If you put the pencil to that, you got 400 major league players. Now, the one Jackie Robinson signed, you take the one Jackie Robinson and you divide 400 into him to get the percentage of people that are coming in. So you come up with a multiplicity of zeros and a .25, to which the militancy side of black baseball said, hey, this is a bunch of crap. No integration. Now, let's talk about Dr. J.B. Martin, who you probably never heard of. Dr. J.B. Martin was the owner of the Chicago American Giants and was the president of the Negro American League. Dr. Martin wanted to do the following. He wanted to take the six teams in the Negro American League and the six teams in the Negro National League and consolidate them into eight teams. And on an expansion basis, place four in the American League, four in the National League of Negro League Baseball. Now, let's look at these numbers and how these things work out. We had the 400, but now you got 200 additional more for the totality of the league. But that 200 is not divided into one. That's 200. That 600 is divided into 200. You come up with 33%. And that would have eliminated, wiped out the entire Negro League, and all the players, all the owners, would be compensated for the players that they developed. Now, as an example, the Kansas City Monarchs, J.L. Wilkinson, Tom Barry, white owners, did not receive one penny for Jackie Robinson. The Newark Eagles did not receive one penny for Don Newcomb. That was Abe and Effa Manley, husband and wife's team. And the home state Grays, Reese's Sonny Man Jackson and Cumberland Posey on the Grays, they didn't get one penny for Johnny Wright. Johnny Wright was the first pitcher signed from the Negro League. Shortly after Robinson, maybe like 3 or 4 months after Robinson was signed, he signed. So this way, they just took the players from the Negro League. And the bad part about it, the Black League actually brought baseball back up. See, three things almost killed baseball in this country. One was the Black Sox scandal. One was World War II. And the other was that shutdown we had about 10, 12 years ago. But the Blacks didn't get as much as they should have gotten out of it by just taking one in and then siphoning players off, which ultimately destroyed the league.
When Jackie was picked, and do you think he was the right pick to be the first player to integrate baseball?
As the way it factored out, he was. No question about it. But as I was on a program not long ago with some young fellow, I was explaining that Jackie was one of many others. And he just couldn't believe what I was saying. I said, well, you had Ray Dandridge and Willie Wells with the Newark Eagles. You had Sam Bankhead and Howard Eastman with the Grays. You had Tommy Thompson with the Birmingham Black Barons. You had Sammy T. Hughes with Baltimore. It was all sorts of ball players in the league. And most of those people that I just mentioned had more esteem in the Black League than Robinson had. But now let me factor this in to make it fair. They didn't know him that well. He only played in that league about 4 weeks. 4 months, I'm sorry. About 4 months. April, May, June, July, August. And he was gone to the major leagues. And these guys had been playing for years. In fact, most of the players in that era wanted if they were going to integrate on the basis that they did integrate it, most of the players were looking towards Monty Irvin as being first.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about how the players that were in the Negro Leagues, once the announcement was made, once Jackie got into a Dodger uniform, how did they overall feel? Did they feel it was tokenism, or did they feel it was going to be the opening of the door for others?
They felt that it may be the opening for the others. There were some who didn't think it was going to work. A lot of them didn't think it was going to work. And a lot of them weren't crazy about it. So but that's all part of life. We're not all alike. We're not all monolithic. So that's great player. Robinson was a great player and a great person. And he is one of those folks like Bell, like Kool Papa Bell. I don't ever hear anybody say anything negative about him. Just a first-class gentleman.
You know, one of the things that was worrisome, at least for Branch Rickey and others, and he did a lot of research on Jackie, was, he was somebody that if you said something to him, and it wasn't appropriate, that he would respond. He was very fiery, and that was what Branch had said to him. You can't respond to the things, the taunts and the slurs that you're going to hear. And put that into perspective for me as somebody that knew Jackie Robinson.
Well, I didn't know him. You know, I just saw him as a child bad boy. I just saw him. In fact,
what I mean by that is that, but you know, talking with other players that had played with him and that's what I'm talking about.
He was. I played with Herb Sewell one winter. Herb Sewell was the third baseman on Monarchs when Jackie was a shortstop. He was. Everybody has nothing to say but positive things about him. He didn't bother nobody. He was quiet. He didn't participate in a lot of foolishness. He didn't drink. He was just a straight out gentleman all the way around. And as I say, I haven't seen anybody say anything disparaging about him at all. Just a great guy as far as the player is concerned. Now he was very racially involved. In fact, I was asked just the other day about how he feel about this. Jackie, 42 day and all that stuff. And I told him, I said, well, I don't think he would have a disdain for it, but he would be much more concerned that only 8% or just at 8% of blacks playing the major league are from the United States. That would be bothering him more. And when you look, he had 80% playing basketball and 70% playing football. And this didn't just happen. This was a cool, calculated plan that was implemented. I know it's in 1950, but I was too young to realize what I was saying. But as I evolved and dialogued with more and more older people, what was going on, I said, hey, the thought process from the majority was, hey, this black kid's going to control all this, but let's retain one for us.
Joe Morgan is a friend of mine, and I've had long conversations with him, and he grew up in California. He went to school here in California. So when he started his baseball career in the minor leagues, it was with the Durham Bulls. And he said he had never seen a sign that said for water fountains, whites only or blacks only. He also said that he almost quit baseball when he played in his first game, and all the African-American people were over in one portion of the stadium in the outfield while the rest were white. And he called his dad and he said, Dad, I'm not going to put up with this. He says his dad told him, yes, you are, and you're going to fight this and you're going to make a difference. How was it that everybody could get through that? Were you so used to that type of slighting that you just – how did you approach it?
Being born and raised in northern Indiana, I was always cautioned about what it was like and told that you just have to go along to get along. When spring training time, the guys went into organized ball, the whites would stay in a hotel downtown. They have to go into other people's homes, live in their homes. Oh, there's one factor I wanted to put in about Satchel. I started to get there, and I didn't get there. When he would go to these other places to pitch, he would demand that he stay in what we call a five-star hotel today. And he didn't eat. He did not eat in the kitchen. He ate in the dining room. Or if he didn't eat in the dining room, he was fed royally in room service. Or he lived with an outstanding person's family, and he didn't eat in that kitchen either. He ate in the dining room. I mean, this was a part of his contracting to go there to pitch for those people.
Mudcat Grant
told me. In other words, what I'm saying is when Satchel Paige came to town, Jim Crow left.
Yeah, Mudcat Grant told me a wonderful story about the fact that, you know, Mudcat was a musician and an outstanding musician as well. And when he was in the minor leagues and they would go and play in New Orleans, the black players could not stay at the hotels in New Orleans. They had to go across the river to Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And he said, but the good part of that was the fact that all the musicians couldn't stay in the hotels in New Orleans either. They had to go over to Mississippi. And so he said, we had some damn good music sessions together at the hotels.
Yeah. You know, I've experienced that too. You know, we would be sometimes in a hotel and our checkout time, let's say it's 2 o'clock. And say, hey, you guys better get out of here at 2 o'clock because Fats Domino will be in here at 5. Or James Brown coming in next. So we had to be, we all stayed in the same hotels. We all saw the same each other. You know. We crossed each other frequently.
Let me ask you what you think the legacy of Negro Leagues was as far as sports and baseball. What is the legacy of that league?
Oh, in reference to what do you mean?
I mean, what did it mean? What did it mean to changing society? What did it mean just?
Oh, man, you know, man, an awful lot. We got a fellow here named Nathaniel Peoples from Memphis here. Nat died about, I think, 2012. Nat starred at Booker Washington High School here in Memphis. Then he starred at Lemoyne College here in Memphis in baseball and football, signed with the Dodgers after a short stint in the Negro League. And the Dodgers somehow traded him to the Braves in a minor league deal. And the Braves in 1954 farmed Nat Peoples to the Atlanta Crackers of the Southern League. Well, he was, I guess you could call him like the Jackie Robinson of the Southern League. And the Old South was in effect then. And you had segregation laws, state laws. You know, you couldn't house and couldn't play and live, you know, with the white players. And it what really got me is that they used to have a civil rights game they had annually. It used to be in Memphis. And I think the first 4 years of it was there in Memphis. Nobody ever mentioned Nat Peoples' name one time. And was he a player? He could throw, run, hit, and he could do it all. He could do it all. But, you know, the quarter, you know, has anybody ever talked to you about the quarter system?
No.
Okay. Now, this is, again, this is in the militant society, like baseball world.
We got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay, the quarter system was only 4 blacks could make a team at one time, for at least 20 years after Robinson went in. Only 4 could be on the team at one time.
What is that day, that game, that moment that is etched in your mind that you'll never forget about your life and your career in baseball?
Oh, boy, you know, it's so hard for me. I love the game, so it just... And trust me, I wasn't that good. I was just an average player. And I'm not being modest. I'm just being honest. It's pretty hard for me to say. I just love the game in totality. I love all parts of it.
What about a performance that you saw over the years as either a bat boy or a player in the Negro Leagues that, you know, just to this day you still shake your head about?
Sam Jethro, to me, was the best player I saw when I was a child. Sam Jethro, you ever heard of Sam Jethro? He's the first black to play with the Braves in 48. I think he's rookie year 48, 49. 49 rookie year. But anyways, he was just the things I saw him do, defensively and offensively. I saw him show out a couple of times. I don't know. I guess he just had good days on the days I saw him. He was just outstanding.
Well, Reginald, I want to thank you very much for sharing your thoughts, your memories about a very special time in baseball, particularly with the Negro Leagues, and what you and the other players and the other people associated with the Negro Leagues did for making sports available in a broader sense, and the legacy that you left. I just admire all of you so much. Thank you for joining me and sharing the stories with me here on Sports Byline.
All right, Ron. No problem.
Take care. Reginald Howard with us again, played second base in the Negro Leagues with the Indianapolis Clowns back in the 1950s. He grew up in South Bend, Indiana. He had a couple of brothers and a sister as well, and he grew up as a bat boy, and he was a bat boy at several of the Negro League All-Star Games in the late 1940s. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.